All right, so here I am. My name is George Tate. I'm a professional performer, magician, mentalist. That's what I've done my whole life. But in my spare time, I like to write. And at one point in time, I wrote a book, not a book, but I started to write a book of fiction based off of a one-man show that I did in 2002 called How to Kill a Piano. Now, that particular show was a combination of both magic and sort of a dramatic, taking a lot of dramatic liberties on a story involving a demonic piano and myself. In 2009, I approached a comic book graphic artist named Jesse Rubenfeld, who I had gone to college with, and we had done five comic books together previously that were released to the magic world only, and I wanted to do something for the public in story format. And I thought, you know, it'd be fun to revisit the world of How to Kill a Piano and turn it into a graphic novel. So as a collaborative project, we set out to do just that. We started a blog. I started the blog. And I would write a chapter, and he would write some spot illustrations or draw some spot illustrations for those chapters. And we did this for a while until, unfortunately, life got in the way. He got sidetracked with other projects. I got sidetracked with other projects. And it was never finished. And when I had time to return to it, he had moved on. And I could never find another artist to work with. And I don't have the confidence in my own artistic skills to revisit the project as it was intended to be. But I found that people, for some reason, enjoy listening to me read this particular story. So I thought I would read some of it here for you now. So without further ado, Chapter 1, How to Kill a Piano. It all started as soon as I was tall enough to reach the keys. I'm 6. I find myself waking in a panic, not knowing that this would haunt my daydreams and nightmares until the last time I turned my brain off. If Uncle Charlie ever knew about these dreams, he'd be at my bedside in a second telling me, "It's okay, George. It's just a dream. You're safe. I'm here." And he'd sit with me long past the moments I fell back asleep to be sure I'm resting peacefully like he had for all the others before me. These weren't nightmares or night terrors. These were different. These weren't something I'd ever tell Charlie about. My story begins in a park unlike those you'll find in your backyard. There stood a particular species of oak tree that was the last of its kind. The branches stretched for what seemed like miles. It was said that each branch reached to the corners of imagination, took a left past the center of logic, and circled back again. It was here that a mother stork and her muster of 50-some babies called home. One afternoon, a small boy and his friend stood at the base of the oak's trunk and began to taunt the birds perched above. "You'd make a delicious meal. We'll hang you, shoot you, stab you, and roast and eat the lot of you come winter," the boy said. A gentleman in his early 40s, wearing a black bowler hat, watched from a park bench at a distance. He called out to the boys. "Don't you ever feel bad for those birds?" asked the gentleman. "They have feelings and families just like you do." "Will we be hanged and eaten, mother?" asked one of the baby storks. "No, no," the mother said, comforting her babies. "You'll learn to fly and we'll escape this world, where everything living green turns cold and white. The clouds freeze and break into millions of white pieces and fall to the earth and cling to the trees." "Will that boy also freeze and break into a million pieces, Mama?" "No, but he will be very cold and miserable. We'll fly to a warmer world and leave them behind, struggling to stay warm as they bind themselves in large sacks that they've sewn to fit over their bodies and arms." The boy continued to harass the storks, not understanding what the storks were saying. "Look at that one. He's getting big. When he gets big enough, I can see him making a glorious feast. My dad is going to get me a shotgun this winter, and we'll shoot hundreds of them and bring them back for dinner." "Will you get one for me?" another boy asked. "You bet I will," came the reply. Rolling his eyes, the gentleman stood up slowly from his bench and approached the boys. "Don't you boys have anything better to do?" he asked with urgency. I want to peck out their eyes for being so mean, squawked one of the baby storks. No, my babies, comforted Mother. Leave them alone. Violence is not the answer. Fly with me, and when you're strong enough, we'll fly far, far away from here. Winter came early that year, and the snow clung to the trees like caterpillars while the family of storks lifted themselves to the skies. Mama, it's amazing, said one of the babies, as she found herself gliding over the town below. It's beautiful, said another as the mother led the way over a meadow far from human eyes to a pool of water that was too large to be considered a pond, yet too small to be called a lake. Mother Stork led her phalanx to the water's edge, where they discovered the remains of a young boy drifting face down towards the shoreline. Mama? Nervously questioned one of the baby storks, but before Mother Stork could respond, a straggly, dark-haired dog leaped over their heads and landed in the water with the boy. From a distance, it would have looked as if the straggly beast had been a large rock dropped into a bucket of water as the storks flew in opposite directions, as if they were ripples of water only to slowly gather again on the shoreline. What happened to him? Asked a baby stork. The material of the boy's shirt barely held together as the stranger dragged the boy to land by his shirt collar. He dreamed himself to death. There was nothing I could do. His name was Harold. My name is Sharon, replied the straggly dog. What will happen to him now? Well, eventually, he'll become part of everything else. The earth, these trees, the sand, all of this was made from deadly dreamers like Harold. But he's missing his tokens of passage, so for now, his body will stay in this in-between for 100 years. I wish those boys who tormented us would end up here, quipped a baby stork. The furry tips of the dog's ears lifted as he turned towards the mother stork to ask, what could someone have possibly done to deserve such a sentence of death? She explained about the mean boys in the town above, but it's not our place or in our nature to decide how or when death occurs, babies. We have a much more peaceful purpose, explained Mother Stork. I have the perfect plan. If you darlings would like to take your revenge, with Sharon's permission and Harold's permission, of course, we will take Harold and deliver him to those naughty boys who spent all his time tormenting us, and he'll have to cry and cry. What about the nice man who came to our defense? Reminded one of the babies. When spring finally came, the snow fell from one of the trees above like teardrops, and Mother Stork wrapped the boy's remains in his shirt. She took it in her beak, lifted her wings, and the babies followed in a breathtaking sea of blue and green feathers. You would have thought the water itself had taken flight. They flew over the pool of water that was too large to be called a pond, yet too small to be considered a lake, past the trees in the park where they spent their days learning to fly, and over the rooftops of the town below, until they came upon the young boy's home, delivering the body to the naughty boy's bedside. The sound of 50 storks taking flight woke the boy, who upon seeing the body began to cry. Harold's remains seemed to smile. They flew back over the rooftops, past the trees in the park where they spent their days learning to fly, and past the pool of water that was too large to be called a pond, yet too small to be considered a lake, to a city where the humans stacked their dwellings towards the sky and buildings that seemed to grow from the ground like glass and cinder block beanstalks. Quickly, children, warned Mother Stork as she landed on an iron balcony's edge high above the earth below. An argument was boiling as four of the babies stealthily entered the dwelling, flying carefully over the glass-covered floor and landing at the crib side of a small child. The child stayed calm as the birds wrapped him in his own bedsheets, lifted him into the air, taking to the skies as the parents of the child argued mindlessly, oblivious, with each cigarette between their fingers dropping to the floor, with embers scattering like ants across glass, and alcohol danced on their lips. Who knows how long they took to realize he was gone? Some say they were relieved when they finally had and quietly went on with their lives. But that's not a version of the story that I've ever told. They carry the child far away from those glass cinder block beanstalks, far away from the pool of water that was too large to be called a pond, yet too small to be considered a lake, and onto the doorstep of a nice man that had come to their defense long before they learned to fly on their own. And that's how I came to be here with my Uncle Charlie. That's the end of chapter one. If you like this, let me know. I will continue, and I'll do chapter two. Peace. Cheers. Thanks. The music in this podcast was provided by Chad Crouch and featured the songs Lemonade, Sky, and Smoke, and were complimentary and provided by the website freemusicarchive.org. The story was written by George Tate, that's me, inspired directly for the 2002 one-man show that I wrote, produced, and starred in a very, very different form of this. If you liked it, please subscribe, please share, please pass it along, and we will definitely do more. Thanks so much for your support. Thanks for listening. I am George Tate. Cheers.